Hi, this is Jean Bruce Scott.
And Randy Reinholz.
And when we're not busily producing some of the most outstanding Native American theater in Los Angeles,
we always like to check out the best of British audio adventures with Alex Lefchuk and his team of the Midweek Drive.
And Midweek Drive morning editions on Siren FM.
And Southside Broadcasting. .podbean.com.
In lui viviamo, ci muoviamo, e resistiamo, dice Paolo, all'Areo Pago, da te ne, chi è costui, come se fosse lì, abile spazio che avvolge tutto, lui il creatore. Domina ogni cosa, traendo l'esistenza dal nulla, aspetta il frutto della tua visione, la visione aspetta l'immagine da quando il verbo si fece carne, la visione. Cappella lo ha descritto Michelangelo, non con le parole ma con una ricchezza affluente di colori, così sorgi dall'inesistenza, ubbidendo al verbo della creazione, qui traspira da queste mura, ma forse la fine al fiora più intensamente. Il giudizio, un
perfect musical accompaniment for driving, or indeed anything, it has to be said. And sheer delight, sheer audio perfection, I'm actually tempted to say, as we welcome composer, conductor extraordinaire, the legendary Victor Vanacore, to the Airways Voice. First time on the Midweek Drive. Victor, good morning.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
Oh, delighted to touch base as ever with you, good self. It's great. I mean, here we are, you know, 6 p.m. just after in terms of British time, and over in California, it's all 10 a.m. It's hence the morning thing, in case people are saying, what's it all confused for? Share with us, Victor, what were we just listening to?
Well, you were just, first of all, I have to be honest with you, this is the first time I've ever been on hold and heard one of my demos, because I guard them so secretly. However, and we're, as musicians, we're such big critics of our own demos. But this was a culmination of many years of researching the writings of John Paul II, Pope John Paul. Actually, now within the Catholic faith, he's known as St. John Paul. But however, his writings, his books called from this particular treatise was the called the Trittico Romano, yes. Roman Triptych, and there's a group of 10 poems. That particular one is called the Primo Vidente, which means the first one who saw. And the genesis of it was probably my Christian faith. I shouldn't say probably. It was my Christian faith. And the fact that I always liked to compose, so the two things came together a few years ago. And the two roads met, and I continued forward with it, and did it pretty much as a passion project, really. Just something to listen to, and then a few people heard it and said, well, you know, you can't leave this on your computer. You can't. We have to do something with this. It's nice. You know, being a composer and arranger, you know, we never think our stuff's any.
Hey, sometimes we can be too critical, Victor, and we just need to ease back. We'll just tease it out with the studio audience that we've actually got here. Debbie, what did you make of La Sorgente, the aspect we just heard there?
I don't listen to much classical music, but that was lovely. It was very relaxing. It was
okay. And Richard,
I enjoyed it. It got me thinking. I think that's what it was supposed to do. So I was in deep philosophical thought.
He was actually, Victor. You know, he almost sort of went transcendental in the studio here. It was wondrous, you know, from that point of view. And another young man who probably is not, again, his theme, but from your own perspective, Joseph, what were your thoughts?
Well, it's different compared to what I usually listen to, but it was nice and relaxing.
Yeah. As we said, it just works with that. I'm just fascinated, actually, Victor, between, you know, your shift from that to obviously composing for TV shows such as American Idol, Survivor, working with Natalie Cole, George Benson. You've conducted the LA Philharmonic Orchestra, the St. Louis and San Francisco Symphonies, and you're worried about your own sort of profile? Unbelievable! Genius!
Well, that's the one thing about... It's the one thing about music and golf, which I've just taken up the last 12 years. Yeah. They're truthers. So is art. I mean, painting. They're true. It's all about the truth. I mean, in golf, it's the same thing. Either the swing is good and it's not. And if it's not any good, it'll tell you what you did wrong. Yeah. And music is about the truth. I mean, so what happens is, I think we're always looking at it through a small microcosm. We need people like your viewers and listeners. Hmm. To listen to it, because we're too critical. I mean, as artists, especially taking something that wasn't really meant to be a libretto. These words were just a conscious stream of thought. So there's nothing strophic about them. There's nothing that's rhythmic about them. So I had to really, sort of delve down into jazz harmonies, and that's probably why it's so transcendental and meditative, because meditative, because when you think it's going to cadence or do something in a final way, it goes on. And that sort of matches the conscious stream of thought that Pope John Paul was under when he probably wrote these, and he wrote them when he was a pope. So
Now, again, the interesting thing, well, I didn't think he wrote them when he was a footballer, but there we are, or a dramatist, basically. No, it's a line. He was. I think he played in goal for a wee while, but clearly he was also he did a whole range of other factors before becoming a member of the church.
Oh yeah, he was a thespian.
Exactly. He's multi talented. Well, it's a Polish thing.
And that's actually, one of the things that drew me to it was also the metaphors with nature. He was a naturalist, and he's always. Many of the poems talk about mountains, streams, and And you could follow the stream, the rhythm of the current, but if you want to change anything in the world, you must go against the current. And so our English translations, which we worked on diligently because it was originally, the whole triptych was written in Polish. Then it was translated to French and Italian. We took both books, and together with our linguists, we were able to put together a cogent flow of an English translation. So when you see the English translations, it's hard not to get emotional about it, because while it's religious in nature, it's a lot about nature and Michelangelo and the Sistine Chapel, and there's a lot of that stuff
now,
too.
The fantastic news, of course, is on Sunday, October the 8th, on this very year, 2017, Sunday, October the 8th, at the John Anson Ford Theatre in Hollywood at 7:30 p.m., you will be leading a 45-piece orchestra, two sopranos, four tenor soloists, together with Lisa Eden and Orson Van Gray II, and there'll be the world premiere of Libreria Editrice Vaticana, 90-minute piece. We've just heard, we had a little mini world premiere, thanks to your good self and obviously fabulous Libyan and so on. But that's going to be exciting times, clearly.
Oh, very much so, because we know it's something for people who love music, for musicians who love music. But like my harpist said, it also connects you on another level. We're not just doing another concert of my charts, so to speak, which I've done plenty of, and I certainly get a lot of feedback from the musicians and the audiences alike. But now you're bringing in another angle of faith and nature, mm-hmm. and about where we're going as a human race. And it's so important, especially in the times that we're living in.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So many materials to go through, and I'm going to open it up to the team in a few moments, but I've got to say, when I saw that, as well as being a graduate of the fabulous Boston, or the Berklee School of Music in Boston, you have also been conductor, keyboardist, and musical arranger for the Jackson 5. Now, are we talking Blame It on the Boogie? Are we talking ABC? Are we talking I Want You Back? Which one are we going for?
I see you've done your homework. It was right after, it was right after Dancing Machine, so it was in a period when Michael was 14 to 16 years old, and they had a contract at the MGM, the old MGM, yeah. Which is now I think Bally's, in Las Vegas. So we appeared there about 2 weeks every 2 months, plus going around the world.
So ABC probably was actually in there, which is always a person. To me, the ABC for the Jackson 5 was very much the equivalent to One Bad Apple for the Osmonds, you know, a different sort of line.
Oh, yeah. As a matter of fact, when Michael passed, I wrote an arrangement called The King of Pop, and it's got pretty much everything from ABC, I Want You Back, all the way up through Billie Jean. And I wrote it for symphony orchestra. It's almost like a mini suite. And a lot of orchestras play it around the United States during like the summertime or for summer pops series. And I felt it incumbent upon me because I knew them quite well. And I used to take Michael and Janet, if we were at a hotel on the beach, I used to get them out of their rooms and take them to the beach. And I came from a large family, so I kind of really appreciated being around them.
Yeah, we feel in many ways, because when Michael did pass away a few years ago, we actually have regular features with his next-door neighbours, actually, Shirley Jones and Marty Ingalls, and they were saying that it's quite interesting, sort of seeing the furore that was going on. It was a strange world in many ways. Debbie, have you got any questions you'd like to put to Victor about working with Michael Jackson, or indeed Ray Charles, or Johnny Mathis, or indeed the Bruce Springsteen connection?
I'd like to ask, what's your favorite recollection of working with Michael?
Wow, let's see. My favorite recollection was in the studio in Encino. Joe came in one day and told him, Michael, you have to stop. You know, you really need to listen to these or watch these tapes of Fred Astaire and Gene Kelly because you're reminding everybody of James Brown. And then over the next year was how he incorporated the dance moves of Gene Kelly and Fred Astaire into his wonderful, I mean, he just developed a whole nother style. And then all of a sudden on stage one day, he was spinning, of course all the microphones had cables, so we had people on the side paging the cables, and he spun so fast that he tied up the cord around his legs so tight, must have been seven or eight turns, and then he did one flick of his foot and the wire went, he went the opposite direction, the wire went all over the place.
Disaster! No! It's like doing with headphones in the Siren FM studio, it's gonna be all over the place.
I'm telling you, it was unbelievable, and the audience was just, and it's just one of those things that happened, and I thought, to have that sense of balance, to know that you have to go back the same amount of reps
exactly.
You went. Yeah, it's like an Olympic diver. I mean, come on.
A natural then, obviously.
And oh, my goodness. And a good guy, too. A really good kid. He was a good kid.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's interesting because clearly we all build on the shoulders of giants, and you mentioned obviously the legacy of Fred Astaire and various other folk there. Just work on that basis and again build on the whole future. I've got to say that one of my favourite musical moments has to be listening to your interpretation of Over the Rainbow, with of course Johnny Mathis being the special guest on this particular aspect. If you're kind enough to stay with us, Victor, I'd love to play this now. Would you like to just do a quick introduction to this Grammy winning Somewhere Over the Rainbow with, of course, special guest Johnny Mathis?
Well, yes. Yeah, so the genesis for this particular arrangement was, and it's quite a lengthy story. If you bear with me, I'll try to shorten it. When I was about 13 or 14 years old, I was doing a club gig with a bass player and a drummer from Yale University. It was in New Haven, Connecticut. That's where I'm from. And I complained about this couple coming in every week. And I would complain that they would ask for Over the Rainbow. And the bass player, who was a professor, said to me, "Listen, young man, you don't put any song down. If you really want to do something, when you get older and you get as prolific as I think you're going to get, you write an arrangement of the song that you like the least."
So here comes Ray Charles, music director, arranger, opening act from 1990 to 2004, the Victor Manacor incarnation of Somewhere Over the Rainbow with special guest Johnny Mathis.
Birds fly. symbol. Why then, oh why can't I? Why then, oh why can't I?
I think a live studio round of applause, please. Yay! Wondrous, wondrous. And in fact, Debbie, you were saying that your mum's favourite singer was indeed Johnny Mathis.
It was, yes.
So the heart-renew stuff there, yes. You burst into that. Richard, I know you're very keen to ask Victor about the Springsteen connection.
Yes, well, I just wanted to ask him, what does he think of Bruce Springsteen and what would he pick as his favourite Bruce Springsteen song? Really, because he's got a few great ones, I believe.
Given that Bruce Springsteen is connected with your good self through grandparents, I believe.
Yes, grandparents were brothers and sisters. My grandfather came from Vico Equense in Italy, and he had seven sisters, of which Bruce's grandmother was his sister, one of his sisters.
So, I mean, is it possible to actually select a favourite from Springsteen? I mean, have you ever arranged any Springsteen material yourself? Or is it a case of, well, one day Bruce will realise that he needs to get back in touch with me?
Actually, I did a chart for somebody a long time ago, and it could have been either Born in the USA or Dancing in the Dark. But that I don't have a favorite one. There's a lot of them that I like. So
we'll leave it out there. Now, I mean, just looking at the CV here, I mean, we talked about obviously your work with Ray Charles from that point of view, but you've been guest pops conductor with the Grand Rapids, Kansas City, Tucson, Indianapolis, Charlotte, Jacksonville, Buffalo, Phoenix, and the St. Louis Symphonies. You've written and arranged music for Laguna Beach's acclaimed Pageant of the Masters. You've appeared with the Los Angeles Philharmonic, the Atlanta, the Houston, Seattle, San Francisco, Sydney, Melbourne, Edmonton, and Vancouver Symphonies, as well as the Philharmonic Orchestras of Calgary, London, Belgrade and Bratislava, and the Hanover Pops and Mozarteum Orchestra. When do you get time to actually breathe, Victor? Because, you know, it's phenomenal.
Well, when you're reading them off like that, it sounds like a lot. But over the course of the years, they've come in with enough time so that I could have, you know, changed the computers in the 90s. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of downtime between a lot of those performances where I took the composing in the computer, learning all the software. And you know, looking back, there was a lot of work, but it was spaced over a nice stretch of time, and I was able to budget my time so that I could study and further learn about music and the depths to which it will take me. So one of the things that you may have forgotten, that I was Barry Manilow's musical director for 6 years.
I was going to mention that, but I was holding back the old notion. Sometimes you can have too much Barry. Let's just test the sort of, now I suspect, given the age that we're dealing with a couple of our co-presenters, just mentioning the word Barry Manilow, people will actually say, I've never heard of him. Let's try with Joseph Hanson, Barry Manilow. Nope, no. Shaking her head from our 16-year-old. Richard, Barry Manilow?
I've heard of him, but I wouldn't be able to name anything he's done.
Oh, Debbie, surely Barry Manilow.
Yes, of course.
Exactly. Of course. You know, you sort of work through that.
Legend.
Yes. Precisely. Exactly. But I've heard it so probably from his own lips that he would have been nothing without Victor Vanacore's arrangements.
Yes.
That's like the classic line. So it's worked out. I was actually quite astounded, actually, to see you also, together with your brother David, one of the composers for the CBS show Survivor. And you were provided music for the 2005 Academy Awards show, including, in addition to that, The Apprentice with a certain chap who's now President of the United States. I don't know where we could go with that, but, you know...
Imagine that.
Yeah, exactly. At least he would never have had the temerity to actually say, you're fired, Victor. That's the important thing, you know. Great stuff.
That's true.
A reminder that the date to set in your diaries, if you think you're going over to the States, or indeed you're listening to this in the States or whatever, is certainly Sunday, October the 8th, 2017, 7:30 p.m. at the John Anson Ford Theatre in Hollywood, to have an outrageously wonderful experience, the 90-minute world premiere of 10 new classical arias set to 10 poems by Pope John Paul II, of course, composed and conducted by Victor Vanacore. Genuinely wonderful. Now, tough call for the sort of the wrap up, actually, Victor. We can offer you, or offer your good self, the opportunity. It's decision time, really. Do you wish to go for another sample with the Stupore from the aforementioned La Sorgente, or would you like Bruce Springsteen with Streets of Philadelphia? Where do you want to send the listener?
Oh, you're painting me into a corner.
Well,
I think Stupore would be fine, considering some of the comments that you got from your listeners who were listening to the last one.
Indeed. Well, we've got two final questions for yourself. Firstly, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the program today? Has it been okay for you?
Oh, it's been wonderful. I really enjoyed it.
So can we prevail upon your good self to hopefully join with us in the very near future? Who knows, maybe even before, but certainly after the October August event. Will you be kind enough to join us again? Because we need to feature some Barry Manilow. I appreciate that. You know, we can only start in. Will you be able to return?
Absolutely.
Yay!
Se non il bosco discende al ritmo di montuose fiumare, questo ritmo mi rivela te, il verbo primordiale. Com'è stupendo il tuo silenzio in tutto ciò che da ogni dove propala un mondo reale, assieme al seno di bosco. Di fermarmi qui, consentimi di fermarmi al varco. Ecco uno di questi semplici portenzi. Non si stupisce una piumara ascendente, e silenziosamente discendono i boschi al ritmo del torrente. Però un umano si meraviglia, il varco che un mondo trapassa attraverso l'uomo, e dello stupore la soglia, una volta proprio questo portento fu nominato. Solo col suo stupore tra le creature, senza meraviglia per le quali esistere.
I know, it's a shame to have to fade, but we will have the full version of Stupore in the very near future. And of course, a reminder that keep October free. If you fancy going over to Los Angeles to see that fabulous production with Victor Vanacore in top form. Kaylee Carr, how are you, and how is the weather in Sunderland?
I'm very well, thank you. The weather's actually going pretty great at the moment, so it's not too good. Doesn't surprise me.
And yet, Kayleigh, since last we spoke, Sunderland remain unbeaten. You had a draw, a one-all draw with your opening championship battle through, and you actually beat Bury, the might of Bury, in the English Football League Cup, or Quarco, or very strange names, earlier in the week. So you should be celebrating, Kayleigh. You should be celebrating.
I know, yeah, I think we're definitely very happy, yeah. Makes
well, never mind. And when Kayleigh's dad is happy, Sunderland is happy. In the studio, we've got three fine folk. Richard Bellis, who's currently just wrapped up his first year at the University of Teesside, in which he was studying what?
Film and TV production.
Film and television production. Because the module that you did, Kayleigh, and you graduated at Teesside University, what were you reading?
I was doing multimedia journalism and graduated in 2014.
Multimedia journalism, since you're graduating, they've stopped the course apparently, Richard. It doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, I believe they have stopped it. I think it's just straight journalism now.
So you see, Kayleigh, they realised that once you'd left, there was no point continuing, quite frankly.
No, I wasn't sure of that.
Yeah, the message is actually there. We talk about websites and various other things, and we've been promoting the YouTube channel, which, of course, has the renowned tale of Dwarven Lego. We should actually say commission by the time was actually mentioned on that. Joseph, you didn't put any of your stuff out as yet, really, for public consumption. Quite very wise. You know, stay on Snapchat. It's a different line. Kayleigh, of course, is quite happily unwrapping a pretty puzzle on her blogspot all the time of day. But anyway, Kayleigh, would you like to speak to Joseph or Richard or indeed Debbie Hansen about their first experience of life in the Southside Studio Siren's sister station here in the northeast?
Yeah, it would be nice just to see how you're finding it. I remember my first time I ever went on, I was like extremely nervous. But yeah, how are you finding it? You're enjoying it?
Yes.
That's two yes. And I'm only twisting their arm a little, so don't worry. You know, it's okay. And then there's Joseph.
Yeah, well, I'm not really that nervous because I'm used to speaking in, like, general towards the microphone and, yeah, I do this with some friends at Tuned In, so it's not really that discomforting, but it's all right.
So let's throw out a few basic questions. Three favourite musical artists?
Jessie J has to be up there.
Uh-huh. Price tag okay?
Yeah.
Right, yeah. And?
Queen and... Hard to choose a third one, there's so many.
Right, okay. Are you more Domino, Nobody's Perfect, Who Are You, Who's Laughing Now, Bang Bang, or indeed Price Tag as far as Jessie Day is concerned, or indeed even with David Guetta, Laserlight, where would you actually go to in terms of musical choices?
Who's Laughing Now?
Really? Who's Laughing Now? Is that because of the comedy theme of your podcasts and I.O. audio?
Yeah.
A bit of irony. It works wondrously well. It could actually be a theme. Well, that'll be coming up. Richard might well be. Do you need to leave us in a few moments, or you can stay on for the final sort of 20 minutes or so, because we've got to squeeze in Katie Grimmison as well, briefly from Birmingham. But Kayleigh, how is the cultural thing going? Because as you know, last week we scored you 2 out of 3 in terms of selecting cultural activities to go and do in Sunderland. In fact, actually, Joseph, have you ever been to Sunderland, or is it a case of no? I'm from Redcar. Why would I actually go to a foreign land?
Yeah, I have been to Sunderland.
And your thoughts on the city?
It's really, really nice, yeah.
Oh, that's very good.
Very nice.
Yeah. Debbie, would you enhance that? Would you say, yes, Sunderland is a really, really nice city, or would you say, no son of mine is going to spend his time in Sunderland?
We've only been to the stadium, like, for a concert.
I've been another time.
Oh, sorry, you went to school. Yeah. Oh, sorry,
was it a school trip? You had a school trip to Sunderland?
Yeah.
Was that to see where Kayleigh Carr lives? I know. We are setting up a group of things in Teesside, Kayleigh, for the friends of Kayleigh Carr to actually travel up to see you. You're aware of that, so, you know. Because if you won't come back to Teesside, we'll have to come and see you. It's important.
I know, I must come back soon. I know, I keep saying that.
It's such a long way away, isn't it, really? They're all the way from Sunderland to Teesside, and don't get me started on Lincoln, because, oh, Lord, it's like a different country. Yeah. It's extraordinary. So what did you see in Sunderland, Joseph, when you were on the school trip? I mean, or did they keep you in the bus all the time because they thought you might be contaminated by the natives?
Well, we were like, can't really remember what we were doing, but I just knew it was enjoyable and I liked it.
So a bit like the soldiers who went to Vietnam, it was so traumatic they blocked it out of their existence, he can't remember. Sorry, Kaylee, but I know sometimes he's come back with PTSD and his mum's already having to cope with that post-traumatic Sunderland disorder. It's strange but true. Anyway, as I said, Kaylee, have you discovered anything else that you would recommend possible school trips to go and see if they're heading into the Sunderland area, obviously when they're back in term time?
Of course, yeah, I sound really bad here, but unfortunately I haven't, no, I'm really struggling to find, like, events.
And she lives there, you know, what can we say?
Not much happens when the summer's almost over.
Well, you know, we don't give up on this, Kaylee, we will come back to you find that. So we have two final little lines to you as Jessie J is beginning to work through that. In fact, actually, it's not Jessie, it's a phone that's going off, probably from Katie Carr in Birmingham, who's actually saying, look, call me now. It's all right, Katie, we will be calling you in a matter of moments. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today, Katie Carr?
I certainly have, yes.
Will you be back again in the very near future?
I would love to, yes.
Yay!
Mummy, they call me names, they wouldn't let me play. I've gone home, sit and cry almost every day.
A little smidgen there's who's laughing now. I'm sorry, Kate Grimerson. I had intended to play some Oasis, but our special star junior guest, Joseph Hansen, said, I don't want Oasis, never heard of them. Let's have some Price Tag, or indeed, Who's Laughing Now with Jessie J. It's a way forward. Actually, have you heard of Oasis in your time?
Yeah.
You have? Very good. Do you know, unlike ourselves, Katie, Joseph Hansen was born in the 21st century. So he has no recollection of anything before, like, the turn of the century. So somebody like yourself was born in the 20th century. Far too old. Never mind. Joseph, 16 English years of age, and he's been broadcasting for 3 of those years already. You must be tired. But still, never mind. Have you ever been to Birmingham? We talked about you visiting to Sunderland. Has Birmingham ever crossed your radar as yet?
No.
Young man from Redcar, never been to Birmingham. Debbie, his mum, have you actually ever been to Birmingham?
No.
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 That's 2-0.
I've been to the airport.
You've been to Birmingham Airport.
That's a start.
Yes. It's a bit far. It's quite a journey.
Yeah. We are, of course, talking Birmingham, England, not Birmingham, yep. Alabama. Yep. So that's Richard Bellis, from your own perspective, and currently just wrapped up your first year as a film study student at the University of Teesside. Has Birmingham ever crossed your radar?
I've never been to Birmingham.
Never
ever.
Been to Birmingham, no. Ever. You see, Katie, the challenge
but
is
I've
that...
I've never been to Middlesbrough or Teesside, so I should get myself down there.
Well, there is that, of course. You know, she made it to Lincoln. In fact, good point. Katie, have you even heard of a place called Redcar?
Yes, I have. They've got a Speedway team, I think.
Katie Grimerson is not just an ace graduate from the University of Lincoln where she read American Studies. She knows about her Speedway teams. Sorted. Genius. Okay. Questions from yourself, Richard, for Katie, who graduated from American Studies, is now one of the ace promoters of the Coolmore Business District in Birmingham, where she does all sorts of marvellous things. This is after she, of course, was an ace SEO, internet search engine optimizer, and indeed has put her American Studies to all sorts of wonderful things. You're right at the start of your academic career in many ways. Any thoughts that you'd like to quiz Katie on?
Yes. Well, I haven't actually thought of anything, but what did he say? Was it a search engine
optimizer? SEO.
Yeah, that sounds pretty intense. Yeah. What's that?
But it was. I basically used to help businesses get online on Google, so help them win the ranks on Google to help them get more business and more traffic to the website.
Yeah, to get them up the ad ladder.
Yeah. But I've come out of that now, and I'm more into like traditional marketing, so events organising and helping to promote businesses, that just by going round really and printing out posters and getting in touch with people. I think I prefer that way as opposed to digital.
Yeah. And sipping champagne with internationally recognised chefs as well, of course.
Yes, there is that as well.
Well, it's one of those things that's actually around. And Debbie, do you ever feel, yes, I should have gone down that route of marketing, if only I'd taken an American Studies degree at the University of Lincoln.
Sorry, I'm not that bright.
come now, Joseph is your son, and obviously from that perspective, you must get it from someone. So clearly, you know.
Must be a very interesting job, though, the event side of it, is it?
Yeah.
The business, dealing face-to-face with businesses and helping them along.
Yeah. I mean, I've only been in it about 2 months now, and I've met so many different people, and it's a very hands-on career role.
Mm.
It's not for the faint-hearted, as my boss said. But I just got to get stuck in with it, really.
And she will continue to do so, because that's the kind of wonderful soul Katie Grimason actually is. Katie, I know you're not necessarily a YouTuber, unlike, of course, Richard Bellis, but you must check out Dwarven Lego on YouTube. It's Richard's very own channel. I'll just give you that as something, if you're a bit bored sometime, I think, oh, what do I do? I've listened to another Broken Mitch Revel song and Broken Mitch... just thought I'd throw it in there, Broken with Revel song. Yeah, we will, but you know, another time. But clearly, checking out Dwarven Lego, it's a whole new world. And of course, you can see the fine trio who are in the studio on our Facebook page in the very near future. It's all great stuff. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link, Katie Grimason?
Yes, as always.
Very short and sweet, but you can blame our Victor Vanacore for that, and of course Phil Dearness. It's Los Angeles squeezing the whole range of things out from that point of view. Will you be able to return, indeed possibly next week, where we'll be doing a little feature with our fine folk from Stewart Park in their restoration project for Askham Bryan College. So will you be okay for maybe 7 days or so from now?
Yes.
Yay!
I will be.
Drum roll and go!
Indeed, a Deborah Harry fan with Blondie?
Yes, takes me back.
In fact, I thought Debbie Harry was actually stepping into the studio when you arrived today. I thought, it is. It's the Debbie Harry dreaming in every... Marvellous. Anyway, it's time to press another button, specifically this button here.
From LA to Lincoln and via sirenonline.co.uk to the world, it's time for the midweek drive to connect with investigative filmmaker and planetary truth seeker, the one, the only, Phil Leoners.
So that would be you, Phil, then.
It is, and I actually, it feels good to hear that introduction, I must say, because, Alex, I finally feel that I have successfully tackled the challenge of figuring out the structure, the outline for part two of The Truth Is Out There. As you know, I have material that spans, well, what, 8 years now? Mm. 8 years of filming? 9 years of filming? 8 years, probably.
Since the first Nordic Sci-Fi London.
Yeah, well, numerous countries, numerous continents, so many topics, so many centuries of human history, and I finally feel I understand how these stories fit into place. Still have to do the editing of them, but story is structure, and to have successfully tackled the structure makes me feel worthy of those kind words said about me in the introduction.
Well, there we are. And Malcolm Tomlinson's daughter, of course, Eleanor Tomlinson, is Demelza in the exciting Poldark, which more people were watching than the Diana Turks recently. But still, that's life. Okay, let's do our introductions of the terrific trio of new, completely new, sparklingly wonderful midweek drivettes that we actually have for you today, Phil Leoners, to cast your critical ear over. We have 16-year-old Joseph Hansen, who wrote in saying, "Can I please do some stuff on your radio? I said you're too young." And then his mother phoned up and said, "Can he please do it?" I said, "He's too young." And then they both sort of replied, said, "Can he?" I said, "It's all right. He can come and sit in on a show then." So, yeah, so they're here. So that's great. And then we actually have Richard Bellis, who had tried to get on a number of radio stations and been booked in for a whole variety of times. They just ignored you, didn't they, Richard?
Yep.
Yes.
They ignored me and cancelled on me.
They cancelled on you and ignored and cancelled. Did we ignore you?
Nope. You got straight back.
Exactly. Even to the extent of on the programme Fly Me to the Moon, we had Rob Nichols saying, "So if Phil Leoners ever joins us on Fly Me to the Moon, the official Borough Supporters podcast for the web and so on, will he actually explain what Fly Me to the Moon, the fragrance for men, actually is?"
What, me?
No, Phil Leoners. It's all right. It was a very confusing jingle which he put together. It's basically because he's a Crystal Palace fan and he's based in California, so why should he be there? I think Debbie and Joseph, and indeed even Richard, Phil, and I'm providing you with some background here, which you can possibly use to take in your own unique way. Richard, of course, has the YouTube channel Dwarven Lego. Dwarven Lego, Dwarven. Lego, Dwarven Lego, in which he's... How many movies have you put up there that you've created?
I think we're getting on 30, 35
And he's a great aficionado of Ray Harryhausen.
Yep.
20 years of age, and he loves Ray Harryhausen. It's fantastic. Just cheers. And, as I say, he's unsure as to whether he's going to go into radio or film production. In fact, Joseph, you were sort of in the first hour of the programme about wanting to be a director. Is that right?
Yes.
Who is your favourite director?
Hard to choose. Mm. Well, I mainly like DC or Marvel films.
Right. Yeah, so not Luc Besson and Valerie and the Thousand Planets. Strange, very few people actually do seem to like that. I did, and I'll keep flagging it up and saying, go and see Valerian and the Thousand Planets, especially if you liked Fifth Element. Phil, that's giving you a little bit of background in terms of our Debbie Harry lookalike, Debbie Hansen, her son Joseph, and Richard Bellis. Whom do you want to go to?
Well, there's so much to cover. I'll go in reverse chronological order then, in terms of topics that you just raised, starting with Joseph's favorite director. Well, Joseph, where do you live?
In Redcar.
That's in Middlesbrough.
Okay. In did you just say... Okay, I thought he said in his car.
I know.
Okay.
exactly.
Well, then you, like any good director, that's absolutely true. You've got to learn how to be able to take naps in your car. Because it's long hours on the set, my friend. But what I would urge you to do is learn what you can about the people who have directed your favorite movies, be they DC, be they Marvel. Learn what you can about those people that directed it. Specifically, especially, learn, because, you know, there's so many interviews you can find, and you kids can find anything on the web these days. Find out what movies influenced them, what filmmakers influenced them, and then go and watch those filmmakers' movies so that you can see how your favorite directors were influenced. And if you enjoy those movies by those directors that influenced your favorite directors, then perhaps learn about what directors influenced them. This is the best way, to me, to start to build up the length and breadth of your history and your knowledge when it comes to filmmaking. It's just follow the filmmakers that you love and learn who their influences were and what they learned from them. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And Phil Leonis will be invoicing you for that very sage career advice through the postal service in the near future.
Look, Alex, as we know, filmmaking, perhaps not radio, but filmmaking is a young man's game. So at 16, he's almost too old to get started, and I certainly expect that Joseph will be earning Lifetime Achievement Awards within 5 years.
Precisely. And what about Richard? Because when did you first start making stop-motion animation videos?
Oh, about 10 years ago.
So when you were 10?
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, share with Phil what you shared in the first hour with our listener and Ian and so on about what your genre topics actually are.
Well, I don't really have a specific genre topic. I like, all my films are basically action and adventure. I like James Bond, I like westerns, I like gangster films. Godzilla as well, the sort of stop-frame animation monster films. I like them as well. So I try and replicate that in Lego form.
Would you mind if we set Phil in as a channel, but the challenge of between this week and next week, so 168 hours, actually having a look at your YouTube channel, Dwarven Lego, and giving us a little critique, if he'd be kind enough to do that? Would you accept that?
That would actually be really helpful.
Would you be up for that, Phil?
You know, if you could see my notepad in front of me, you would know that I have already written that channel down. So that was on the to-do list already, my friend. But yes, an email with a link is always a helpful reminder as well. And of course, I would love to look at it. All of us. I think all of us started making films by doing stop motion. I don't know what format you were shooting them. Back when I was a kid and we were doing stop motion, it was on Super 8 film.
Yeah. Well, I've got... I don't know what camera I've got. I've got, like, a Panasonic 5X something, you know, loads of numbers and loads of letters afterwards. But it's a really good piece of kit, and it's got a great zoom, so you can zoom in pretty far. I think it's got something like 60 times zoom, and it's pretty helpful.
I'm surprised.
Did you see that the actor who was inside the suit in, I think, 11 Godzilla movies died this past week?
Yes. Yeah, that's he was 88, and I think that's a shame. But I remember catching an interview of his once where he said he walked out the American Godzilla film because he thought it was terrible.
That was the most recent.
I loved reading about how many of these movies he was in. I thought that was extraordinary. And, I mean, quite the acting career outside of it. I mean, this is an actor who worked... He was in The Seven Samurai for Kurosawa.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah.
Which, of course, is a classic to put before most folk in terms of the joy. Probably the central classic is Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets. The name, in case you're wondering, was Nakajima, the actor, the name, who actually sort of passed away, because otherwise people say, well, give him his name. He's got to be more than just the guy who was in the Godzilla outfit. He had a name for God's sakes.
Well, why would I... But now that's a spoiler, because, of course, you'll be hearing all about him on this next Monday's Chill Pack Hollywood Hour when we... All the celebrity deaths.
Yeah, him and Glenn Campbell, it's going to be an interesting mashup in Heaven FM, is all I can say. That we wrap up.
Oh, my goodness. Well, we never even got to Jean Moreau on this week's show, the femme fatale of the French New Wave. So, many, many good, great to remember.
As we said on a feature we did on death on the last Midweek Drive morning edition on Thursday, remember, they're really not dead just so long as we remember him. And then I obviously had to point out that was from The Wrath of Khan, which is, you know, a classic. It was signed really with Nicholas Meyer, who might be working on the second series of Star Trek, which might be emerging in its own way, because Star Trek Discovery people are already panicking because nobody wants any toy rights for the whole thing. And it's going to be all problematic and it's all rich gritty, and there's a whole range of things we could talk about then. But Phil, astoundingly, I have to ask you to ask our three fine folk, that's Debbie, Joseph and Richard, those last two questions about how they found their experience of the Midweek Drive, in which we featured William Coles, Ian Lennox, a second episode of Marauder from Penny Evans and the team who put together Marauder, so episode two was featured, Victor Vanacore, the Grammy Award winning composer, arranger and conductor, Kaylee Carr, Katie Grimason, and of course your good self Phil Lennox, senior co-presenter duties. Phil, away you go with those questions.
I haven't even had a chance to talk to Debbie yet, so let me address Debbie. Debbie, did you enjoy your debut, your maiden voyage on the Midweek Drive?
I did very much, and I've learnt a lot, and I've realised how varied the programme is, and there must be a lot of work gone behind all this.
Well, it keeps me away from the loose women and out of pool halls, basically, so off the streets for the time.
Well, I think when you combine Alex's stream of consciousness delivery with that open container of paint thinner he keeps next to his chair, that helps really structure the programme.
Yes, you can visualise it, can't you?
Exactly. Keep going, Phil. Carry on. Who do you wish to go to now?
Can we look forward to all three of you gracing the Siren FM studios again in the near future?
Yeah, I'd be happy to come back, especially on Midweek Drive.
Oh, well, there we are. You see, Richard is up for the whole thing, and he doesn't even have to travel to Lincoln for this moment. Although, as I say, we're in Lincoln. We're not in Lincoln. It's all there. And Joseph and Debbie, hopefully, who knows?
You're in the Schrodinger's cat of studios.
I know.
Alex.
Exactly.
It's both in Lincoln and not in Lincoln.
Precisely. Yes. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today, Phil?
Oh, it's been fun. It was too brief.
But it's good to hear that you're fully conscious, because clearly your state of consciousness with Fuzz and, of course, Lily was not good. And thankfully, I did actually check the email before dialing you up. I was so tech, because time was tight yesterday. I was so close to dialing up at midnight, but I thought, no, I'll just check the email, and thankfully I got the message, so all was well.
I didn't even make it to 11 p.m. Los Angeles time that night, yes.
Maybe next week, who knows what'll happen. Fingers crossed, Phil Lennox will return. Yay!
It's knowing that your door is always open and your path is free to walk. That makes me tend to leave my sleeping bag rolled up and stashed behind your couch. And it's knowing I'm not shackled by forgotten words and bonds and the ink stains that are dried upon some line. That keeps you in the back roads by the rivers of my memory. It keeps you ever gentle on my mind. It's not clinging to the rocks and ivy planted on their columns now that bind me, or something that somebody said because they thought we'd fit together walking. It's just knowing that the world will not be cursing or forgiving when I walk along some railroad track and find that you're moving on the back roads by the rivers of my memory, and for hours you're just gentle on my mind. Though the wheat fields